journalism, or your horizon, vast expansive horizon of your journalism, you know, it questions everything, and everything is considered in a possible, you know, in a possible way, in a very rational way. And so when things like this happen, it's very, you know, you have to ask the question, anything is possible. I mean, if people could carry out 9/11 as an inside job, or going back as far as the USS Maine in Havana Harbor, and all down through the century, you know, all these kind of intrigues and, very real conspiracies, JFK, John F. Kennedy, these people in the power of the United States government and the British government, I mean, anything is possible. I mean, they could do anything, really. They're completely lawless, and what they're doing in Syria is a complete running amok of international law, what they did in Iraq or Afghanistan. So all these things, I mean, are precedents into anything can happen with these people. But in terms of the Ethiopian leader, Meles Zenawi, I mean, yes, anything is possible. I mean, I don't get me wrong, but I just don't see any real grounds for suspecting something sinister in his demise. It was, I think it was just one of these kind of untimely demises, although a few people are wondering and they're questioning about his relations with Washington. But from what I can tell, they were fairly sound and fairly amicable right up to the end. And I don't see any reason for Washington's involvement. Although my caveat, as you well know, Stephen, is that these guys can do anything they want. But I just don't see it happening on this occasion.
Probably that's true, and certainly there are cases of people dying prematurely, Finian, so that's not at all unusual. Meles Zenawi certainly was a U.S. ally for a very long time. Hosni Mubarak was in Egypt. He absolutely fell out of favor, and his demise had nothing to do with the protests on the street. It had everything to do with Washington wanting him out, and they got him out. And there was a lot of manipulation of what went on, even though the grievances in the country are very, very real, and they certainly have an end. Things are worse now in Egypt than they ever were under Mubarak. And this Morsi character, a Muslim brother, Brotherhood guy who is closely allied to Washington and the CIA and British intelligence. I mean, dirty stuff. America loves so-called Muslim extremists. I don't know how the only extremism about them. I don't know. I don't know what mosque he goes to or what he says when he arrives. I don't even know if he goes to a mosque. He's extremist in my mind, like other Muslim Brotherhood members, because they support the things that you and I take aim at. Very close business ties, close banking ties. They support imperial interests. They've been connected to CIA and MI6 going back ages and ages and ages. That's what these people are. And you know if America likes or dislikes somebody when they take over a high office, Finian, do they rant and rage about, oh my God, we... this guy's going to ruin the country, you know, like Hamas in Gaza, or do they make a polite phone call and congratulate the guy? And Obama called Morsi and congratulate him on being elected. Elected? He wasn't elected. He was anointed.
Shoehorned in. Well, I must say now, Stephen, I hope I'm coming across. You're unfortunately the signal in my part of the world. You're coming across quite. You know, the volume is very low and it's a little bit patchy. But I'm just going to proceed anyway. Hopefully,
I can hear you fine, Finian.
I'm coming across to you, okay, Stephen.
I can hear you loud and clear. Which is what matters most.
Okay, Stephen.
And I think for me, coming over the airwaves to progressive radio, I think that's okay. So I think we're okay, and let me let you continue. Shall we jump to the Middle East?
Well, this NAM summit was a very, a very dramatic, significant development, Stephen, this past week. The 16th summit of the Non-Aligned Movement. It was created in 1961 in Belgrade, former Yugoslavia, in 1961. It had its 16th summit. It only occurs every 3 or 4 years. And it's the 16th summit of the non-aligned movement was convened in Tehran, the capital of Iran, this week. Now, I think it was a really major development and significant development. There was, okay, a few anomalies in the summit, and the movement itself is not a bed of roses. There's some very strange members of that non-aligned movement, particularly the Gulf Arab states. But having said that, I mean, I think it was a very significant development, and this is the significance. For 30 years, and 30 years at least, the last 10 years, there's been a ratcheting up of Western propaganda and hostility towards Iran, trying to portray the Islamic Republic of Iran as being some sort of rogue state, a threat to world peace. And yet, this week, you know, something like 120 nations, the members of the non-aligned movement, descended on Tehran for a very convivial, constructive summit of talks for the last week. Now, this completely scotches or negates the Western propaganda that Iran is some kind of isolated, rogue, reprehensible, reprobate state. I mean, the majority of the world nations were in Tehran this week in solidarity with Iran and expressing their support for Iran, for its nuclear, peaceful nuclear program. And I think it's been an immense, an immense bucket of cold water on the whole propaganda effort from the United States and London and France over the last, 30 years, certainly the last 10 years, to try to paint Iran as some kind of irresponsible, reckless, rogue, terrorist-sponsoring state. Well, it's certainly not that if you measure it by the attendance of the 120 nations that came to Iran this week. So it's a very significant development.
Finney, and I agree with you absolutely. I wrote several times about the NAM conference. It was really extraordinary. I would say easily there have been a lot of NAM conferences over the years, as you say, began in 1961. Some pretty historic figures were involved in the beginning from, I can never pronounce his first name, Nero of India and Nasser
Nehru,
of Egypt. Tito of Yugoslavia. Names that people remember to this day. But at least in the last few decades, this was the most impressive NAM conference held. And anybody who may have seen photos of the images of the hall and the enormous number of people attending, the representatives, and I think there were hundreds of reporters that came from around the world. I'm not sure who came from America, Finian, because there certainly wasn't much coverage in the U.S. media. Mm. And the little I saw, there was a terrible Washington Post editorial about it that I quoted from, just outrageous comments they made. You know, when something really is great and really a marvelous event and very prestigious for Iran, and the fact that so many world leaders showing up means showing support, and even Morsi of Egypt, the first Egyptian leader, legitimate or otherwise, to show up in Iran since the 1979 revolution. Ban Ki-moon visited, the UN Secretary General came to Iran for the first time. Pretty outrageous that he showed up for the first time. He's in his second term now, I think, showed up for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, he came with barbs as well as whatever minimal support for just being there. He certainly came with barbs. And Morsi came with Morsi showed solidarity a little bit with Iran. He certainly did not against Syria, and I thought that was very much out of place at this conference, but he did it, and the Syrian delegation walked out while he was speaking. Had I been there, I would have walked out too.
His presentation of what's going on in Syria, Stephen, to me was shockingly inaccurate. I mean, it was really either this guy is very misinformed or there's something more malicious about what he said. I would give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I think like a lot of the world, because of the mainstream media, the Western mainstream media's saturation coverage of Syria in a very distorted, fallacious way, has no doubt poisoned a lot of people's understanding of what's going on in Syria. But certainly, I think Mohamed Morsi, the Egyptian president, the new president of Egypt, his presentation on Syria was very regrettable and absolutely not constructive to any kind of understanding and resolution of the problem there, in the way that he portrayed as the Syrian authorities, the government of Bashar al-Assad, cracking down on the protest movement. I mean, that's just that is just a travesty of what's going on there. I mean, the problem there is, as you well know, Stephen, yourself, is the massive foreign-backed infiltration and destabilization of that country. I mean, what's going on there is a covert war of aggression by the Western states and a regional allies in the form of Turkey and the Persian Gulf monarchies. I mean, that's what's going on. That should be condemned, you know, from the rooftops, that we've got a war of aggression by foreign powers. It's outrageous what is going on. So for Mohamed Morsi to try and portray it in a very simplistic way that, oh, this is, you know, the Syrian authorities are completely reprehensible in cracking down on protesters is really a travesty, and I'm abhorred the way he put it. Now, I think the Iranians were very Iran was very cordial and respectful. They give the guy the platform to speak. But after that, the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, he didn't specifically condemn or criticize Morsi's speech, but he seemed to renew the analysis of that it's a proxy war of covert aggression, because he condemned it, the proxy war, the West proxy war in Syria. So I think that was a bit of a kind of a corrective to Morsi's very, very distorted view on Syria.
Absolutely. I'm unequivocal on Syria, Finian. You've written an awful lot about it. So have I. Syria was invaded. If I've said on air, I can't remember everything I've said in my articles. I've written so many, but I've certainly said it on air that if what is going on in Syria happened even in a minor way in Chicago, it would be irresponsible for the mayor of Chicago not to send out phalanxes of Chicago police and tell them, you stop these thugs, you have carte blanche to do it any way you have to do it. I mean, if people were on the streets of Chicago or any city in the world, let's just say the Western world, any city in the Western world, any city in Israel, you can betcha the security forces would be out in force and they would do what they had to. They would be searching them out. They would be shooting them down. They would be arresting them. And if they didn't do it, they don't belong in office. That's the responsibility of a city government or a national government. And that's what Assad is doing in Syria. So it's the old blame games, Finian. Blame the victim and call the perpetrators, and they're nothing but death squad invaders. Call them liberators. You know, the twisted language that we get all the time, but that's what's going on. They're Western proxies. Washington's behind the whole thing. The Syria conflict, I think, goes back to the early 1990s with Paul Wolfowitz coming up with the idea of knocking off one country after another, naming six or eight of them. Syria was one, Iraq, Libya, Iran, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's just a matter of timing. When you draw up plans, you revise them as time goes by, and you pick your spots to go after them one by one, or maybe you go after more than one at a time. So now it's Syria's turn. Iran probably is next. Maybe they'll both happen at the same time. Who knows? We've got a little election coming coming up here in November, Finian. So that plays into things very strongly.
Yeah.
I suspect that is that's absolutely guiding Obama's policy. But post-election, I think all hell could break loose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really, we're living in such a dangerous, reckless world, Stephen. Where, you know, the state of Israel is threatening Iran with imminent military strikes, and the United States, of course, is backing it up tacitly, if not more than that. But tacitly, they're backing up this, you know, reckless rogue state, this criminal state of Israel, which kind of threatens a neighboring country like Iran with military strike. I mean, it's really, it's a very, very dangerous world we're living in that seems to be out of control because of elite governance. I mean, I'm sure the majority of the people in the United States would be abhorred by this talk of violence and war. I mean, these people, you know, people in the States are losing their jobs, they're losing their houses, or social. There's talk that there's no money for education, no money for healthcare. But yet, you know, the United States can find $3 billion a year to fund Israel, can find, you know, what is it, $600 billion or $700 billion a year to fund a war machine that is running rampant around the world, crucifying countries, destroying countries, murdering people with their drones. I mean, it's an example of, you know, government run by an elite, for an elite that's out of control for that elite. And this presidential election in the United States coming up, I mean, to me, it's just a complete disgrace. Here you've got one guy, Romney, who's, you know, like really rampant and right-wing and in Israel with his begging bowl. And, you know, apparently the American electorate, the only choice they've got is Obama, who's a war criminal. I mean, this guy's been bombing Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan with his drone strikes, that he draws up every week with his Pentagon officials. Every week he draws up a murder list, and they're killing people every week with remote control drones. And yet he's presented to the American electorate as the voice or the person of moderation. He's the guy who kind of is the peace candidate. I mean, it's grotesque. The such a narrow spectrum of choice that people are being presented in the United States. And I don't believe, Stephen, I really don't believe that choice, that twisted, narrow choice, is representative of the good people of the United States. I just don't believe it.
Oh, it most certainly is not. America is a one-party state. I've said that so many times. Two wings. It's one coin. You got one side, you flip it over, you get the other side. It's the same coin. On all major issues that matter most, Finian, both parties are absolutely 100% in lockstep. There's a little wiggle room on some of the other issues that are certainly not unimportant, but they don't rise to the level of War and Peace or the corrupted corporate power that runs this country, money power especially that runs America. Those are the key issues, the stuff that never gets discussed. The imperial wars are called liberating ones and all the rest. The big lie just gets repeated over and over again. And Obama and Romney, you can just shake them up and mix them up and it doesn't matter. Obama could be a Republican, Romney a Democrat, all the same. One's the same as the other. They're absolutely together. And the system is rigged. Big money runs it. The candidates are pre-selected. The so-called conventions are just a bunch of hokum for so many days. Let's take a quick break, Finian.
We'll see it, Stephen.
And we will come back and pick up right after a short break.
And fresh ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Glenn Ford.
And I'm Nellie Bailey. Every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you Black Agenda Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's produced by the team at BlackAgendaReport.com, the cutting-edge publication for news, commentary, and analysis from the Black left.
So check out our view of the world and explore our rich archives on PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward.
And we hope you're coming with us.
Is private. One hand washes the other. That's why drugs are illegal. It's a moneymaker for everybody. It's just like with war. That's why we don't want peace, because our number one export's weapons.
What's going on there, man? How you doing?
What was the question again?
The question was, would you eat your pet?
No. If I had to, yes.
Bear Man Radio Show is live Thursday nights at 9 in the East on the Progressive Radio Network.
Harrison with you with an invitation to join us at our new time slot here on PRN. Mondays from 6 to 7 Eastern, 3 to 4 Pacific. Live from Hollywood, we're going to continue to bring you folks like Clint Eastwood, Morgan Freeman, Rob Reiner, Martin Sheen, and Hillary Clinton. You have the right to call into these folks, and we're making it happen for you. Online and for free and for fun. It's your smart show, Go Harrison, Mondays 6 to 7 Eastern. Live from Hollywood, here on the Progressive Radio Network. As we move forward, we're thrilled you're coming with us. That's Mondays, 6 to 7. Go Harrison.
Hi, this is Maria Heller, and my show, The Maria Heller Show, is moving to Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern. Please join me as I talk about the world and everything that's going on in it, especially here in America. You can listen to all my shows on the archives page, The Maria Heller Show. Listen now on Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time here at PRN.FM.
PRN is your home for the best in music, culture, and commentary with such shows as Cheater and the Rude with Jeff Kreisler and Lee Papa.
Okay, I have said, before we came in here, I said, Jeff, I don't want to make any more of those stupid Santorum jokes. They're too easy. I'm going to defend Rick Santorum for just one moment. And I'm rarely in a position to defend Rick Santorum.
Lee Pundit in an awkward position that is rare.
Pure imagination with Rachel Trapp. Trachtenberg and Julia Cummings.
What are the direct changes that we can make, or things that we can think about or fight for now?
The beginning steps, I guess.
I think everyone in the studio is having a little too much fun. Not really sure what that that was. That's never happened before. I'm sorry.
What was the question again?
The Vinyl Experience with Paul Cavalcanti.
It's Pinback.
You're still going to find some.
Radiohead, Super Collider. The Vinyl Experience.
And the Lifeboat Hour, featuring Michael Rupert of the critically acclaimed documentary Collapse.
George from Connecticut, are you there?
There was something on the web about there was a coordinated shutdown of the Occupy movement. Basically, they want to snatch people and put them in indefinite detention, even in the U.S. Seems like we're redoing the whole creeping fascism exactly why we broke off with them.
I don't think it's creeping anymore, brother. I think it's doing a 100-yard dash right now.
The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us. With us.
This is PRN.FM. Giving you a daily progressive take on the world.
Welcome back. Onward, Cindy and Cunningham. From a long way from where I am in Chicago, but it's always great to have Finian on. Finian and I have gotten to know each other. We haven't met because he's either in Northern Ireland or in different parts of the world, and I'm in Chicago. Oh, in my formal working lifetime, I did a lot of travel. Just about all of it was domestic. I didn't really went out of the country. Finian certainly goes way beyond the places that I usually went to. I got to just about every state except Alaska. That was one I'm very happy to skip. Maybe in summertime it would be all right. Certainly one very, very large place. Anyway, Finney and I, we're back again. And everything
yes,
that you said about
Stephen,
Mary
and the,
is right.
Sorry, Stephen, you know, like our introduction at the very start was a little bit patchy and scratchy because of the connection. And I really meant to say, like, thanks for having me on, and good day and to your good weekend to your listeners. And, you know, just it's a pleasure to be back with you, Stephen.
Finney, it's a joy to have you on. We certainly are kindred spirits, to put it mildly, and I love your articles. Your articles are just absolutely top flight, and not just the quality of your writing and the honesty in what you say, but you pick vital topics that people need to know about, and that's what we need to focus on, the stuff that never shows up in what I call the scoundrel media. You know, when they tell a story, they invert truth. They get everything upside down. The good guys are called the bad guys, and the bad guys are called the good guys. And it's a shame. And anybody turns on U.S. television, what an embarrassment. But I must say, I'm a severe critic of BBC. BBC, everybody should know, is owned and operated by the British government. It simply is a house organ. Just the way, well, the U.S. major media, they're privately owned, but they're profit-making house organs. But we have something called public broadcasting and public radio, national public radio. There's not a damn thing public about them, except they sucker the public into contributing money to them. I mean, these fools that send money to these operations. I mean, these are propaganda outfits. They preach the party line no differently than Fox News and the rest of them. They're just smoother about it. But it's the same ugly propaganda, the big lie on the big issues, again and again and again. They support all the things you and I oppose. Anybody who thinks that they're doing the right thing, even by supporting their local PBS or NPR station or TV channel, stop. Stop throwing your money away. Use it for a good purpose. Send it to PRN. That's a legitimate operation. Anyway, my goodness, we've talked about Iran.
Stephen, I mean, I think there's a very serious conversation to be had there that you've just began on, and that's the sort of what you could call the pseudo progressive or the pseudo alternative media. I mean, you know, there are many sort of so-called alternative media and progressive media, out there. But really, you know, when it comes down to it, when you look at issues like, say, a specific issue like Libya or Syria, I mean, really, these so-called progressive media are really just pumping out a kind of a progressive version or veneer of the Washington propaganda. You know, I mean, like, if I can be at liberty to say one in particular, I mean, Democracy Now. I mean, I've heard about this organization, Democracy Now, with Amy Goodman, and I've heard it's supposed to be very, you know, good, liberal, progressive media. Well, when I looked into it, Stephen, I was aghast. Like, it was really just imperialist propaganda dressed up in a kind of a pseudo garb of progressive kind of criticism. I mean, the bottom line was very much the Washington Pentagon line on Libya, that Libya required an intervention to protect human rights. So NATO started bombing Libya, Democracy Now, people like that were cheering it on. Now we've got Syria, and it's a repetition of Libya, where the West is trying to talk up a pretext for its intervention, self-serving intervention in Syria. Well, as you well know, Stephen, because you've written plenty on it, they're already intervening in a covert criminal way by funding proxy groups to destabilize that society. But that will create a humanitarian crisis. And we've already got this being talked up lately by the French foreign minister and the French president, the so-called socialist president, Francois Hollande, talking about humanitarian crisis in Syria with refugees pouring out of the country. Well, that will play into the whole NATO agenda to present Syria as a humanitarian crisis that will require intervention by NATO forces, setting up buffer zones, no-fly zones. And you'll have the likes of Democracy Now and some pseudo-progressive media talking, singing along that same, singing off that same hymn sheet, talking up the need for intervention in Syria. And it's just a self-serving imperialist intervention. But the really insidious thing about those kind of media, Stephen, is that they're not giving the public a true picture of what's going on, nor are they giving them a true opportunity to make a choice or an opposition to the agenda. They're presenting it as a humanitarian necessity to intervene so that we'll go along with whatever the White House and the Pentagon prescribed for Syria. And so those media are very, I find them very reprehensible and insidious in that, you know, they're carrying with them a potentially, you know, progressive audience to endorse what is a reprehensible agenda.
Absolutely right, Titi, and I've written a little bit about Democracy Now. I've written a little bit more about Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. I would just say, know them by their funding sources. Who puts up the money for them? I'm not talking about the individuals who send them $5 or $10 or whatever they do. They shouldn't send them 5 cents. Let alone $5 or $50 or whatever. I mean, you see the same names crop up over and over again. George Soros. Soros doesn't give his money to promote humanitarian interests. My goodness, neither does the Ford Foundation or the Rockefeller Foundation or any of the corporate foundations. They make an investment in these people. They cut them a little slack to make it appear like they're legitimate. I mean, these outfits, Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, Democracy Now, some others like them, they're very valuable to the imperial marauders, to the corporate scoundrels. Very, very, they have the veneer of legitimacy. And again, they cut them some slack to report honestly or reasonably honestly on some topics. But then when they get to the bottom line ones that the big boys want, no criticism of, no resistance, the war in Syria, the war in Libya. I don't remember what Democracy Now did on Iraq. Probably the same thing. Afghanistan, it's gone on almost 11 years. A little criticism is okay now. It certainly wasn't years ago. And when full-scale war erupts against Syria, you can bet you these people will be in the forefront cheerleading instead of condemning it. And then they'll do the same thing about Iran. They'll beat up on Iran, making all kinds of false accusations. The antagonism toward Iran has nothing whatsoever to do with its nuclear program. Everybody knows it's legal. Everybody knows, everybody who matters, they know it's peaceful. They know Iran doesn't have a nuclear program. How do they know?
Yeah.
Because American intelligence and satellites and everything else have been covertly and overtly surveilling Iran for years, and every year the U.S. consensus intelligence assessment is there's no evidence we can find that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they throw in a tagline to the effect that, well, we don't know that they don't have one. We just can't prove it. We can't find anything. Well, you know, after all this intense surveillance for all these years, if they haven't found anything by now, they're not going to find out anything. Iran does exactly the same thing, more or less, as every country, dozens of them, that have peaceful nuclear programs. I've seen a list of them. I mean, I couldn't memorize all the names on the list. There may be 100 countries in the world that have peaceful nuclear programs. They all do the same things. They get over enriched uranium. They have to make fuel. There's only one country out of the whole lot of them that gets beaten up on, and that's Iran. And Iran is the most heavily monitored country of all the nuclear ones. Ever hear a bad word said about America, Finian? Ever hear a bad word said about Israel? America signed the NPT treaty, but that didn't matter because it violates all the provisions. Israel never signed it. It wouldn't matter if it did because they would violate the provisions. Talk about injustice.
Yeah. Well said, Stephen. I mean, you know, Iran, like, it's got the right to pursue nuclear research, peaceful nuclear technology. It's got the right to. It's fully entitled to, because it's a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and it's complied with all its strictures and all its demands more than any other nation in facilitating inspection, and nothing has ever been found. So the agenda really, and I think a lot of Iranians, you know, realize this, that the agenda really isn't to do with, you know, alleged nuclear weapons. I mean, because as you quite eloquently put it, Stephen, I mean, the amount of investigation or surveillance of that aspect is so intrusive, and it's been so prevalent over such a long time, and it's turned up with zero. It couldn't. So the real reason for that issue is not the alleged issue. It's to do with thwarting Iran as an independent country, an independent power in a region, a critical region for oil, for gas, for, you know, energy. Geopolitically, it's a very sensitive region, and Iran has got an independent polity, an independent foreign policy. It's very critical of Zionist Israel, quite rightly so, because it's a complete criminal state for the last 60 years. Iran has got a critical foreign policy towards Washington and its Zionist criminal state. So Iran stands out as being in the crosshairs of Washington and its lackey Western states, in the crosshairs up for taking down, because it's independent. And in this global world of global imperialist capitalist control, you can't have somebody that's independent. It's not tolerable. It's not bearable. So Iran has to be taken out. That's the bottom line. And they will use any excuse to do that. And the nuclear issue is just a pretext for bearing down on Iran and trying to dismantle that country, to cripple it, to regime change in that country, to make it into a pliable state of the Western orbit, Washington, London, France, to make it a pliable state within their orbit. And that's really what's at issue, and you know that well too, Stephen. So the nuclear issue is really a false herring. It's a red herring. It's a complete charade. It's not a real concern by these Western powers. It's a pretext to just throw the spanner in the works of the Iranian country, and that's what it's all about. So in that way, it makes their intervention and their foreign policy all the more criminal and immoral, because how can you justify that kind of agenda towards a peaceful, independent country? It's completely indefensible. So they have to dress it up in the pseudo agenda of concern for nuclear weapons, which, as you pointed out earlier on, Stephen, and I want to reiterate, is exposed as complete bankrupt agenda, because the state of Israel has got something like 300 nuclear weapons, which are completely illegal. They shouldn't possess them, and they are threatening the entire region with those that nuclear arsenal. So if the West was concerned at all about nuclear weapons and the risk that it poses to regional security, the number one stop would be in Tel Aviv, not Tehran.
Well, there's no question that is true, and Israel has an undeclared declaration to use nuclear weapons and every other destructive weapons it has if it feels it's being threatened enough. It's no holds barred going after whatever threat it feels might really do Israel some very serious damage. And there's a wonderful man, I wish he were alive today. He died too young as far as I'm concerned, and is Israeli, and I think his profession was as a chemist. He was a professor, but he wrote marvelous scholarly political works, and he wrote one or two books on Israel's nuclear program. I think he became so renowned that he was bulletproof. Somehow he kept getting away with this. His name was Israel Shahak, S-H-A-H-A-K. Mm-hmm. And if readers can find a used copy of one or more of his books, I strongly recommend them. I've got three or four of them on my shelf. I read them years ago. They are very, very incisive, very, very important information. And he made no bones about Israel's nuclear program and what it is and what Israel stands for. They will use their nuclear weapons if they feel threatened enough, and they won't hesitate a moment doing it. You know, that moment hasn't come, but at some point it could. And Israel now, my goodness, years later, they have delivery systems. They have a nuclear submarine, at least one, and Germany is building another one, or maybe giving them another one. I don't know. I'm probably building them one. So, I mean, they can go anywhere in the world and launch nuclear weapons, and that's what Israel is all about. You never hear one word about it. You never hear a word about inspecting their facilities. They've got a number of them scattered around the country. Yeah. That's the real menace in the region, and of course America is the global menace, including in the region, and these are the real things that people need to worry about, and it goes under the radar with the major media, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in America, and you really got to go to the alternate media sites, and maybe some media, and other, some, not too much, but some media in other parts of the world, maybe a little bit more honest, to get the real McCoy. Well, we might press TV for certain, Iranian Press TV, they have you on, Finian, they have me on. It's the real McCoy. They tell what needs to be told. They have other people that come on this program, marvelous, marvelous people, the kind of people that should be in the mainstream, but they never get on because they tell important truths. And the name of the game is don't let those truths come out.
Well, I must say, Stephen, I do find Press TV a breath of fresh air. I mean, I've watched BBC, CNN, and France 24 and these various other mainstream media, news organizations. And really, it's a bit like eating popcorn or candy floss. You know, you take a bite of it, and it's really very empty and saccharine and false. It's not substantial. And I just find Press TV the best news service around. I mean, on any issue, whether it's Palestine, Syria, or even what's happening in America or Britain or Europe. I mean, I just find Press TV much more forthright and honest about what's going on than what you would glean from the likes of the BBC or CNN. I mean, you spend like, you know, all your time in BBC kind of like, gripping onto a comfy, you know, it's kind of like spongy sort of like a coffee seat and you know, not really getting to the grip of the issue. I mean, it's Press TV is much more forthright and refreshing in that regard.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely, indeed. I mean, it is so much. Anybody listening to PRN can access Press TV online, and I strongly recommend it. Do what I do. I listen. You can get its video, audio, of course, along with it. I listen more than watch. It's the information that I want. But listeners to this program can access it very easily. They run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and they have marvelous programs, news programs, special programs. There's a marvelous one that's had me on a number of times called News Analysis. It's Iran's version of Meet the Press, except Meet the Press is a fraud in America, and News Analysis is the real McCoy. It's the real McCoy. Yeah, they have super guests. The last time I was on with two marvelous guests. One of them comes on my program, Paul Craig Roberts, and he doesn't come on to befuddle the public. He comes on to lay it on the line and tell them what's going on. And they had another marvelous guest based in Beirut, I believe. He's also excellent. and they have a whole array of these people. And this is the real McCoy. Russia Today does the same thing. They have marvelous guests come on telling important things. There's another Russian program called Voice of Russia, and they do the same thing. Imagine these two countries that America beats up on, Finian, saying all kinds of nasty things, certainly about Iran,
yeah,
and Russia very much is in the target zone.
It's really hilarious. It really, you see what you've just pointed to, that the two countries that the United States beats up on, like Russia and Iran, really is deliciously ironic that you would actually go to the, and I do mean this objectively, truthfully, honestly, that as you just point out, if you want to get your information, you know, check into Press TV or Russia Today. I'm not so familiar with Russia Today, but they seem to do good journalism. But definitely, you know, Press TV is, if you want to find out what's going on in the Middle East and wider afield, you check it out. Please, your listeners have just got to check it out. But Stephen, I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, there's the Rachel Corrie court case there during the week, and you wrote about that very eloquently and very passionately and very timely. You know, the poor Corrie family, they had their daughter murdered by the Israeli Defense Forces back in 2003. I mean, I remember Rachel's death. I was working on a newspaper in Dublin at the time, and it was late at night. The paper was going to bed, it was going to print, and then these photographs came in of Rachel's brutal killing underneath a bulldozer, an Israeli Defense Force bulldozer. I just get very frustrated and very angry with the Western media. It's complete lack of coverage over something like that, a barbaric killing of an innocent humanitarian, you know, by all accounts, a beautiful person out defending other human beings. And it's the Western media just, I don't know, they either underreported, or they bring in all sorts of, like, aspersions into the equation rather than just presenting it as a cold-blooded barbaric murder. But, you know, when we were talking about Press TV earlier on, I mean, the coverage of Press TV this week in that court case in Israel, where the Israeli court ruled crazily, outrageously, that she it wasn't the fault of the Israeli Defense Forces that she died. They let them off the hook. They said it was an accidental killing, or it wasn't an illegal killing. It wasn't an unlawful killing. So they let the Israeli Defense Forces off the hook. I mean, how could they possibly do that when the girl was run over by a bulldozer? But yet, Press TV, you know, this is where, as a contrast and a comparative study of the media, shows the worth of the media. I mean, Press TV gave it very good coverage, and they pointed out the cruelty, the barbarity of her murder or of her killing, much more than the Western media would have ever done. They always couched these things in kind of dumbed down sort of terms. So would you agree, Stephen?
I absolutely agree, and I'm a little remiss because in the back of my mind, I wanted to honor on this program Rachel Corrie, this absolutely glorious human being who literally gave her life to save a Palestinian home from being demolished by an Israeli bulldozer, not an ordinary bulldozer, but a bulldozer specially made by Caterpillar to knock down homes of human beings so all they have left is rubble. And she was wearing a bright yellow vest, the driver also a soldier of this bulldozer, with a giant blade, clearly saw her. People were screaming for him to stop, and he ran her down. And to make sure she was killed, he backed up, and he ran her down again. And I think Israel overstepped, Finian, by absolving this cold-blooded murder. Rachel is a world hero, this glorious young woman. She won't be forgotten. decades, maybe generations from now. She's a symbol of everything that's wrong about Israel, and her death has a lot of meaning to it. Anyway, we're out of time, Finney, and I wish we could go on, but I wanted to pay my respects to Rachel. She is the kind of human being that I honor. I'll certainly bring her up again. I wrote about her earlier. I wrote about a court decision. I write about Israel-Palestine so often as well. Finian, it was great having you on. We are out of time. I'll just remind my listeners that, of course, we're on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
It's a pleasure.
On weekends, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.